Speak in the name of one God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Please be seated. I'm still working on the microphone issue. It's an interesting noise at the beginning of the service, and now I moved it away, and now I think it's too quiet. But anyway, back to the sermon. If you guys remember last week, if you were in church, you heard the story of doubting Thomas, the story of Thomas when Jesus is resurrected from the dead. The same day, Easter Sunday, he comes to the disciples who are in a locked room. Everyone's there except for Thomas, and then Thomas comes back and says, "Unless I see the marks on his hands and his feet and the slash on his side, I will not believe." And then Jesus waits an entire week. He reappears to the disciples with Thomas present, and Thomas sees the marks on his hands, and then he believes, and he says, "My Lord and my God." And we have dubbed him Doubting Thomas. He's not actually called Doubting Thomas in the Bible. We call him Doubting Thomas. And the point about Doubting Thomas is that that story, the story of Doubting Thomas, always happens on the second Sunday in the season of Easter. There are less than 10 stories that repeat every single year on the exact same date, and all of them fall on a feast day. But most of them repeat in story, in theme of story, but they're not actually told from the same source. What I mean from that is the story of the transfiguration, where Jesus goes up on the mountaintop and he's transfigured, and he tells people not to tell anything, and then they descend upon the mountain. That story appears in all three synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. So depending on what lectionary year you're in, it depends on which source you hear the story from. We always hear a story about Jesus being the good shepherd, but it depends on whose year we're in, which story we hear. And there are less than 5 readings that appear every single year from the exact same source that we hear on the exact same day. And they're always big feast days. I'm talking Christmas Eve, Easter Sunday, Ash Wednesday, Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, and the second Sunday in Easter. It's the exception to the rule. It's not a feast day. It's just the second Sunday in the season of Easter. We always get John's reading of Doubting Thomas, because doubt and faith go hand in hand. And sometimes directly after resurrection, directly after a loss that has been restored, there is doubt that arises in people's hearts. So we always hear the story of Doubting Thomas. Well, the third Sunday in the season of Easter, which is what we're in now, doesn't have a story that repeats. It has an action that repeats. It's the only time that an action repeats every single year on the third Sunday in the season of Easter. And that is that Jesus eats. Every third Sunday in the season of Easter, Jesus has food, and he consumes it. In one year, in Luke's year, when we're in the Gospel of Luke, we hear the story of the road to Emmaus, where Jesus is walking along his disciples, and they don't recognize him, and he comes, and he breaks bread with him, and he consumes the bread and the fish, and then their eyes are opened, and they said, "Were our hearts not burning within us as he was talking and walking among us?" And then when we're in Matthew's year, you hear the story from John, which has the disciples in the boats, and Peter is one of the disciples in the boats. He sees Jesus standing on the shore. He is overwhelmed with joy to the point where he gets out of the boat, even though they're already rowing to shore, swims to the shore. Jesus breaks bread and has fish with him, and then he asks Peter 3 times, "Do you love me more than these?" And Peter says 3 times, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And then he says, "Then feed my sheep. Tend my sheep. Feed my sheep." That story's in John. Jesus eats then. And then in Mark, when we're in the Mark lectionary year, which we're currently in, year B, Mark doesn't have resurrection stories where Jesus eats, so we're back in Luke, and we hear the story that we heard today, where Jesus eats with his disciples. So why is it important that Jesus eats? What is the big significance of Jesus eating, and why does he always have to do it on the third Sunday in the season of Easter? Essentially, Jesus answers the question for us in our gospel reading, which is, you're not seeing a ghost. The point of Jesus eating is to prove to the people who are reading the book and to his disciples that he is not a ghost. Ghosts don't eat. Ghosts aren't resurrected in bodily corporal form. They cannot consume food. So when Jesus says, "Touch me, I have flesh and bones, I'm not a ghost," and then proves it by eating, it is important that the disciples write that down so that other people, for us, other people who are reading it, don't believe that Jesus was just resurrected in an imaginary form from the disciples who desperately wanted the story to be true. It is proven to be true because Jesus is resurrected in bodily form to the point where he can eat. That's why the story is so important. But it also raises a long list of huge theological questions, mostly around our own resurrection. What happens when we die? what kind of body do we get? Do we get a heavenly body that comes back? Now, if a 70-year-old man dies, is he resurrected as a 70-year-old man, or is he resurrected in his prime at, let's say, 35? And if he is resurrected in a 35-year-old's body, will his children who knew him as a 70-year-old man recognize him as a 35-year-old? What about his parents? Will he recognize his parents? What happens when we die? What about our bodily resurrection? Now, I could spend the next year talking about it. If you get me talking about theology, we could spend some time here. But if you have big questions like that, come and talk to me. I would love to discuss theology with you. But we're not going to go down that rabbit hole, except for to say this reading opens up a whole rabbit hole full of theology questions that are still being hotly debated and discussed today. It also opens up the question about Eucharist, because in all three readings where Jesus eats on the third Sunday in the season of Easter, he breaks bread with people. And so what happens in this story is the centrality of Eucharist. Many of you may remember an Episcopal church pre the mid-80s, the 1980s, where Eucharist was regularly done once a month. It didn't matter if you had a full-time priest. It wasn't for lack of clergy shortage. It was that every week you would typically do morning prayer with one of the Sundays a month being designated for Eucharist. The priest would be there for all of the Sundays. The centrality of Eucharist changed greatly in the revision of the prayer book. 1928 prayer book said morning prayer was central to corporal worship. The 1979 prayer book, which is the prayer book that we're currently still using, says Eucharist is central to worship. That every time you have a priest, that priest should celebrate Eucharist. Eucharist becomes more and more central. And the theology behind it is from these readings on the third Sunday in the season of Easter, that Jesus breaks bread with his disciples and he is made known to them in the breaking of the bread. Again, we could get through down this whole rabbit hole list of the centrality of Eucharist and the theology of Eucharist, and we're not going to do any of that today. My main point in bringing these up is to say this one specific reading that you hear has a whole host of huge theological questions that we could spend years discussing. Theologians have spent years discussing them. We could join them in discussing it. But the other things that I want to talk about this week is how similar this reading is to our reading that we heard last week with Doubting Thomas. This week, again, the disciples still don't necessarily believe. They still have doubts. One of my favorite lines from the reading is, while in their joy, they were still disbelieving. Because two things can be true at the exact same time. They can have great joy that Jesus is resurrected in bodily form and they can touch the wounds on his hands and his feet and his side and he can eat that broiled fish with him. They can have great joy that that has happened. And they can still disbelieve it. And they can still not be sure what it means. Both things can be true at the very same time. And if both things can be true for the disciples, they can absolutely be true for us. So if we sit here and say we are so overjoyed at the resurrection of Jesus, but we don't frankly completely understand what it means, or we don't completely understand what Eucharist means for that matter, both can be true at the same time. The disciples didn't have all the answers. We don't need to have all the answers. The other big point about this reading that I find interesting is what Jesus tells him at the very end of it. He says, "You are witness to these events." Essentially, the book of Luke, the Gospel of Luke, starts in one of the most unique ways of all of the Gospels. It starts with a letter to you, the reader, and it says something to the effect of, "I'm writing this book for you, dear Theopolis." Theopolis is Greek for lover of God. So, dear lover of God, so that after you read all of these accounts of Jesus, you will come to understand that he is in fact the Messiah. Meaning that once you, lover of God, who reads all of these stories about Jesus, you will find that Jesus is absolutely, beyond refutable doubt, he is absolutely the Messiah, the Son of God. And what we have here at the very end of Luke's gospel is going to wrap up in a matter of sentences. What happens directly after this, he breaks bread, he tells them that you're a witness to these things, he goes outside, he prays, and then he's resurrected. And the gospel of Luke ends. And what happens here is we have the circular event that's happening, where Jesus says to them at the very end of the Gospel of Luke, look, all of these things that are written about in the Law of Moses and in the Psalms and the Prophets, all of them have come true through my life. See, it is written, and I have fulfilled them. So when Luke says in Luke 1:1, I'm writing this for you, dear lover of God, so that you may understand. By the end of Luke, he is saying, see, I have proven my point. You can understand that Jesus is clearly the Messiah and the Son of God. The important thing to know is that Luke is writing to a community of people who believe in God. That's why he calls them lovers of God. These are people who have faith in God. He's not trying to prove that God exists. He's trying to prove that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God. The same author who wrote the Gospel of Luke also wrote the Acts of the Apostles. They kind of go hand in hand. They are technically separated in the Bible by the Gospel of John. I frankly don't know why, but they are technically separated by the Gospel of John, but you should read them as kind of one really long book. And essentially, the Acts of the Apostles is somewhat inaccurately named, but it starts basically the same way as the Gospel of Luke does, where he says, "Dear Theophilus, dear lovers of God, let me show you what has happened in the early church since Jesus has been resurrected. And by the end of it, you will understand why we are church, and you will understand that Jesus is who he says he is." Of course, the Acts of the Apostles is somewhat inaccurately named because we do have a reading from Peter makes an appearance in our reading from today, but the actual apostles, those 11 apostles that remain after Jesus' resurrection, are in the very early chapters of Acts of the Apostles, and then they just disappear. And so there's really the Acts of the Apostles is somewhat inaccurately named because they're not really in 99% of Acts of the Apostles. But the other big important part of Acts of the Apostles is that it invites us to become the apostles. It invites us to become the people who spread the news of Jesus to the world. As you guys have probably heard, there's a difference between disciples and apostles, and the apostles get a name change right around Jesus' resurrection. If you're reading through the Gospels, they're called disciples pre-resurrection, apostles after Jesus' resurrection. And if you remember, the reason for that is disciples are learning from a teacher, apostles have learned from a teacher, and they're being sent out to teach others what their teacher has taught them. So the apostles after the resurrection are being sent out into the world to teach the world about Jesus. But Acts of the Apostles also invites us to become apostles, to be the people who go and spread the news of Jesus to the world around us. The last line in our gospel reading today is that you are a witness to these events. Jesus tells his disciples, you are a witness to the things that have happened. You are a witness to proving that I am in fact the Messiah, the Son of God. The root word for witness, if you look it up in the original Greek, is martyr. The word martyr directly translates as witness, meaning that when we witness things, we become martyrs to the event. We witness them, we bear their truth, and part of the responsibility of bearing that truth is to share it with the world. So in the season of Easter, what we're called to do as church people is to move away from being disciples where we're still studying and learning. Although if that's where you are, that's perfectly fine. You can continue to be a disciple for as long as needed. But hopefully some of us might be ready to move into the season of being an apostle, to be ready to go out into the world and to share the good news of Christ with the world. But the way in which we do it also matters, to do it with kindness and dignity and respect, understanding that not everyone has the same theology and background as we do. But the big point that we have here is that we're called to do it in community. We're called to do it one alongside another. So here in the season of Easter, there are 7 Sundays in the season of Easter. We're approaching the halfway point. About Wednesday, we'll reach the halfway point of the season of Easter. Maybe it's time that we start looking towards our next thing and discerning what God is calling us to do. How is God calling us to be a witness to these events, to the town of Hopkinton, to the people around us, to our community? And is that something that we can bring back to church? Are we called to do something here more than gather and worship on Sunday? Although gathering and worship on Sunday is how we gain strength to go out into our community. So the question that remains for all of us is, what are we called to do? And how do we discern that in community, knowing that all of us are witnesses to the event of what Jesus has done, and that at its best, when we witness at its best, our lives become the witness that other people need to see. Amen.